Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
We'll be in Jeremiah 37 through 40, verse 6. This basically deals with the siege of Jerusalem. And these chapters deal with the different aspects of what's happening in the city as Jeremiah tells the king what's going to happen. Let's begin then in chapter 37. Now Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, made king in the land of Judah. Now you might want to see 2 Kings 24:17. Zedekiah is a vassal of Nebuchadnezzar. You would think the man would have been loyal when he was put on the throne by this Babylonian monarch. But we learn from other accounts that he became pro-Egyptian, thought the Egyptians would help him, and he trusted in them. Now, reigned in the place of Kana. Now, this is another name for Jehoiachin, who went into exile after 3 months on the throne. Jehoiachin, okay? The son of Jehoiakim. They're very close and confusing. But neither he nor his servants, nor the people of the land. Now, this little phrase, the people of the land, is difficult because it changes. In the pre-exilic period, it means the very rich, the landed gentry. But in post-exilic, it seems to mean the poorest remnants that were left in the land. And so it changes meanings, and that's hard sometimes for us to understand. Notice in verse 3, yet King Zedekiah sent Judicol and Zephaniah the priest to Jeremiah the prophet, saying, please pray to the Lord our God on our behalf. Now this Zephaniah, he's called the second priest. Now that really means he was the chief policeman of the temple area. Let me give you a few references. Jeremiah 21:1, Jeremiah 29, verses 25 and 29, and Jeremiah 52:24 is where he's called the second priest. Now, what were they asking Jeremiah to do? Well, the Egyptian army had pulled away for a little while, and they wanted Jeremiah to pray that the Babylonians be defeated by the Egyptians or something like that. Now, Jeremiah was still coming and going out among the people, for they had not yet put him in prison. Meanwhile, Pharaoh's army had set out from Egypt. And when the Chaldeans who had been besieging Jerusalem heard the report about them, they lifted the siege from Jerusalem. Now, don't you think that there was some excitement in that city when that siege was taken off? Now, this Pharaoh is known as Hophra, H-O-P-H-R-A. The Targums call him the lame Pharaoh. He is known in secular history as Apis, A-P-R-I-E-S. He is the successor of Pharaoh Necho II, who reigned from 610 to 595. And this Pharaoh reigned from 589 to 570. Okay? And that's the period. Now, notice the word Chaldeans here in verse 5. The Chaldeans can be a racial group or a special class of educated priests and astrologer kind of people. Now, notice the wise men, you can look at Daniel chapter 2, where Daniel is called a Chaldean, and Daniel 4:7. Now, for a national group, you might want to see Daniel 5:30, Daniel 9:1, 2 Kings 24:2. Linguists say that their language is very similar to Ethiopian, and so maybe they're Cushites as far as their background. We're just not sure. They're Neo-Babylonians here. Now, obviously, verse 5 reflects what's happening in Jeremiah chapter 34, okay? Notice it says they lifted the siege from Jerusalem. Chapter 34, 8 through 22, the slaves were reclaimed by their original owners when the siege was lifted. So the hypocrisy and trickery of the people in the city are seen clearly by this happening. I'm sure they thought, boy, we knew God would do it for us. They were fooled tremendously. Verse 6, then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet, saying, thus says the Lord God of Israel, thus you shall say the king of Judah, who sent you to me to inquire of me? Behold, Pharaoh's army has gone, which has come out for your assistance, is going to return to its own land, Egypt. Now, this vacillating king sent for Jeremiah several times. Chapter 37:3, again in 17, and then down in 38:14, he's going to come back to the prophet, sometimes secretly. He had a good heart, but he was a very weak, vacillating king, as we're going to see. Now, it says they're going to return to the land of Egypt. You might want to see Ezekiel 30, verses 20 through 26, for the prophecy of Egypt's defeat. Although we have no real account of the two armies meeting at this time, we have the prophecy of Egypt's defeat in Ezekiel 30, 20 through 26. Now, in verse 9, do not deceive yourselves. You see, they were really claiming some promises back in the period of Isaiah under King Hezekiah. And they were saying, God spared the city under Hezekiah when Sennacherib, the Assyrian, besieged the city. God saved it. You might want to see 2 Kings 19, 35 and 36, and Isaiah 33, 20. Now, the only problem was the covenant is conditional. It's conditional on their ethical response to God. They had totally left God out, and therefore the covenant was broken, and God's promises weren't valid if His people did not respond in kind. Now, let's move on to verse 10, for notice it says, for even if you had defeated the entire army of the Chaldeans who were fighting against you. Now, here we have a strong metaphor, and it's saying, if every soldier of the Babylonians was wounded, they're still going to burn your city. What a strong promise that Jerusalem is going to fall. Now, in verse 12, it mentions to take possession of some property there among his people. Now, this seems to relate to chapter 32, verses 6 through 25. There's been some discussion about which comes first. It seems that chapter 37 probably comes first because Jeremiah is not put in prison yet. And he's already in prison. Remember, the book's not in chronological order. But there is a definite relation between 32, 6 through 25. Now, this is really showing the hope of restoration, for Jeremiah is buying a piece of land in the middle of a military invasion. So Jeremiah has great confidence that God's going to restore the land to his people, and that's a symbol of that. Now, Kimchi, that Middle Ages Jewish exegete, says that instead of take possession, it should mean to hide among the people. Well, that's at least what the officer at the gate thought. Notice in verse 13, he's trying to go out to his hometown of Anathoth through the gate of Benjamin, but an army officer sees him and says, you're trying to desert to the Chaldeans. Jeremiah says, no, that's not true. Now, the army officer surely had some background to think that. Chapter 21, 8 through 10, Jeremiah said, y'all ought to desert. Go over to the enemy and you'll save your life. And so, surely this man thought, well, he's trying to desert. But that's not at all what Jeremiah was doing. In verse 15, the officials were angry. They beat him. They put him in jail. This is obviously a different set of officials than is mentioned in chapter 36, verse 1, that were so helpful to Jeremiah. Remember, 36:1 is in the days of Jehoiakim, and 37 is in the days of Josiah. You've got to be careful about the chronological order of the book of Jeremiah. Okay? Notice that Jonathan is a secretary of state kind of man. They threw him in the dungeon, verse 16. Now, the dungeon really means the house of the cistern, okay? The word dungeon is related to cistern. And basically, this would be a solitary confinement in a recently rebuilt large underground cavern. Moldy, no ventilation, solitary, dark. It was a terrible place. Look at verse 17. The king sends secretly to Jeremiah. He's apparently afraid of his own advisors, and so he sends for him. Is there a word from the Lord? This man wanted to hear the word of the God, but he wanted to hear it on his terms. When he hear it, he didn't respond to it. Isn't that just like us? We want God to bless our plans, our thoughts, and yet when God speaks, he expects obedience. And this king would not obey. Notice where it says in verse 19, this is kind of the closest Jeremiah ever gets to I told you so. In verse 19 he says, and where are your prophets who prophesied to you saying the king of Babylon will not come against you in this land? He's saying, where are all those fancy guys who laughed at me and made fun of me years ago? You know I'm speaking the truth now, Zedekiah, because all I have said has come true. Zedekiah, listen to me. But Zedekiah would not. Now, in verse 20 we see the human and prophetic side of Jeremiah. Boy, he has given the king the message with no compromise. He said, this is the way it's going to happen. And then he says, oh, king, please, please don't send me back to that cistern prison. Don't you see the great prophet who wouldn't compromise his word for a minute, yet the human being who says, oh, please, get me out of that place. I'm going to die there if you don't get me out. Aren't we all a strange mixture of clay and iron, good and bad, wanting God's will, strong in his word, and yet so weak? Now, in verse 21, they're going to give him some bread. Notice it mentions from the baker's street. Now, basically what this meant is that different commercial groups usually clustered together. And so there was a baker's street. I'm sure there was a smith street. I'm sure there was a Shepherd Street, maybe, or whatever. And so they kind of grouped together. That's a sample of this. Now, chapter 38. Now, there are four men mentioned here, and they're all going to be against Jeremiah. They're going to think he's a traitor. Now, Josephus tells us, he dates this, in the ninth year of Zedekiah, the tenth day, the tenth month, he dates chapter 38. Okay, and you see those different men's names. I was surprised. I was looking at my Young Concordance, and the first man, Shephatiah, is not even listed in my Young's Concordance. Isn't that funny? It's an error in that concordance. Now, notice that Jeremiah, he's been put in the guardhouse now, but he's a little free. He can go to the courtyard of the captain of the guard, but he's still preaching. You see that? And he says, the sword, the famine, the pestilence is going to get you. Now, these are three things that are connected with a siege and an invasion. The sword, the famine, and pestilence. All that occurred in these walled cities. These people, when they heard the enemy coming, they would sound the trumpet on the walls. And all the people from the area would rush into the city. And so the resources of the city, both food and water, were taxed. And eventually they ran out. And great sickness and death, even cannibalism, we learned from, I believe it's Lamentations 4, occurred in the city of Jerusalem. Now, you might want to see chapter 21, verses 8 and 9, for this same kind of message about desert. God will protect you. Desert to the Babylonians and you'll live. Now, in verse 4, the official said to the king, "Now let this man be put to death, inasmuch as he is discouraging the men of war who are left in this city." This implies there's been a lot of casualties. This is also very similar to the Lachish ostraca that we have from archaeology, describing the same kind of time, the same siege by Nebuchadnezzar II, and a prophet was preaching the same thing in Lachish, maybe even a reference to Jeremiah's words that were being read there. We're just not sure. Okay. Notice in verse 6, it mentions the king's son, but remember, that is not a literal son. It's a high court official. We've got to be careful there. They're going to throw him down this old cistern. Now, there's no water in it. Everybody had private cisterns to catch the precious water when it came in Jerusalem. And apparently this was empty, so they're going to drop him in. Now, how far? 20 feet, 30 feet? We're not sure. But he sunk into the mud. Now, Josephus tells us he sunk into his neck. The text doesn't say that, and we don't know how far it is. It was a miserable, miserable time. Jeremiah was an older man now. And here he was thrown in the mud. Now, he's going to be helped by a man named Eben Melech. Now, Eben is really the name servant, and Melech is the Hebrew word for king. So it means servant of the king. Now, really, chapter 39, verses 15 through 18 seems to be out of place. It's going to deal with this same man and how God's going to promise to protect him. But anyway, they're disjointed. Now, he's an Ethiopian. He's a black man, and he's a eunuch. And we've often wondered about this word eunuch. Sometimes it means a physically emasculated person, a castrate. But in Genesis 39:1, Potiphar was married and called by this same term. So we're not real sure if it's a court official or someone who's been physically castrated. If he was really castrated, in Deuteronomy 23:1, he couldn't even be a member of the people of Israel. And that God had great love for him, just like the Ethiopian eunuch in the Bible days. Now, the king was sitting at the Benjamin Gate. Apparently, this was a place we could go for public trials. And Ebed-Melech came to him and said, "It wasn't fair. Don't do this." So the king vacillated again. He listened to his advisors. Now he's listened to Ebed-Melech. One time he says, "Jeremiah, tell me what you want." Next time he won't listen to it. What a weak, vacillating king this is. Notice the king says, "Take 30 men from under your authority." Now, the word 30... most modern translations have the word three. You'll find that three in RSV, New English Bible, Jerusalem Bible, and that follows one Hebrew manuscript. Now, the Hebrew of 30 and the Hebrew of three are very close. The consonants for 30 are SL, SH. The consonants for three are SL, SM. I think 30 is probably true because they were afraid of these advisors, okay? So he takes 30 men, gets him out, puts rags, gets some rags to put on his arms so the rope won't cut him, and sets him free. Boy, what a friend. Look at verse 14. "Then the king Zedekiah sent and had Jeremiah the prophet brought to him at the third entrance." Now, from 2 Kings 16:18, we think this may be the private royal entrance to the temple. He wanted a private conversation with him. And so Zedekiah says, "Tell me what the God says." And Jeremiah says, "No, you won't listen." Look at Zedekiah's promise in verse 16. saying, as the Lord lives, this is an oath. I think as the Lord lives is really a way of saying the word Yahweh, which is the Hebrew verb to be, the ever-living God, from Exodus 3, 12 through 14. Surely I'll not put you to death. But notice that in verse 24 he says, if you tell anybody what we've talked about, I'll kill you. Boy, this king is something else. Promises he won't put him to death and then threatens him with death. Then in verse 24. Well, in verse 17, Jeremiah again says the same message to Zedekiah. Notice the three titles of God. The Lord, which is Yahweh. That's that covenant, special covenant name from the Hebrew verb to be. The God of hosts. That's the army of the captain of heaven. A military term. The God of Israel, the covenant relationship. Now notice the if you of verse 17, the if you of verse 18. Jeremiah says, if you'll do this, you won't die. You won't be hurt. But he didn't, and the prophecy fell. Notice in verse 17, the king of Babylon, in verse 18, Chaldeans. Babylon and Chaldeans are used synonymously in this context. Okay? Verse 19. I dread the Jews who've gone over to the Chaldeans, lest they give me into their hands and they abuse me. Now, this meant the deserters who had already left the city. It was typical for them to be, these kings, to be tortured or abused. Zedekiah was afraid that would happen to him. But here we have human fear over against the Word of God, and Zedekiah went with his human fear. Doesn't that sound just like us? Verse 20, Jeremiah keeps the conditional element. Obey the Lord. Look at verse 21. But if he had acted on Jeremiah's promises, Jeremiah's promises in God's name would have come true. But he did not act, and he was abused. His eyes were put out, his sons were killed in front of his face, and he was taken into captivity and never returned. Now, verse 22. The women will say, now one of the, in the ancient world, for the women of the court to ridicule a man was the height of shame. And that's one of the things they're going to say. These women are going to say, your close friends. This was obviously the pro-Egyptian party, the fair-weather advisors who had been influencing the king to resist Nebuchadnezzar. Notice it says, while your feet were sunk in the mire. That's kind of a play on Jeremiah's condition. He was sunk in the mire, wasn't he, in the cistern. Notice it says, your sons to the Chaldeans. In verse 23, why don't you put out by the side Jeremiah 39:6, 2 Kings 25:7. 2 Kings 25 and 24 are a parallel to this whole period, this whole event. So I hope you'll look at 2 Kings 25 for a good extra source on this period. Now in verse 24, the king says, you promised me, you won't tell. And Jeremiah says, okay, I won't tell. Now Jeremiah tells a lie in verse 26, 27, 28. I think it's unfortunate. Jeremiah compromised himself some when he let the king force him to lie. I don't think there's any situation in which such lying is valid. And Jeremiah is human just like the rest of us, and here he got caught in a lie. Now, notice in verse 39 is the actual siege. Now, it's dated very, very specifically. Jerusalem was captured. Look at verse 1. But now in verse 2 is the date. And then the rest of verse 1, in the ninth year of Zedekiah, the tenth month, that's when the siege began. Now, let me give you a few references for when the siege began. Jeremiah 52:4, 2 Kings 25:1, Ezekiel 24:1. Now let me give you a few references when the city fell, okay? Be Jeremiah 52:6-7, and 2 Kings 25:3-4. So the siege lasted about a year and 7 months. Most people think it started in December of 588 and closed around 587, 586 when the city fell and the temple was destroyed. Now, notice if you would please in verse 3, there are several names listed of these Babylonian officials. And boy, it has caused havoc in the translations. Let me show you what havoc it's caused. Some think there are six men mentioned in verse 3. That's King James, the American Standard Version, and the Septuagint have six different individuals. But the Revised Standard Version and the New American Standard Version have four men, while the Peshitta and Josephus have five men, and the New International Version and the New English Bible have three men, and the Jerusalem Bible has only two men. Do you see the great confusion? Now, these same Babylon officials are mentioned down in verse 9 and verse 13, different ones of them. We don't know how many there are. There's either six or two, somewhere in the middle. We're not sure. Now, this Nergal-Sir-Ezer we think is probably the one listed in the Babylonian Chronicles, who finally killed Nebuchadnezzar's son, evil Merodach, and became the Babylonian king. That's really possible. Here, he's a high official. Now, in verse 4, the king, when they saw the Babylonians had breached the walls, they fled at night out of the back gate. Now, Josephus tells us it's 12 midnight. Now, how he knows, he's writing during the time of Jesus. How he knew it was 12 midnight, I don't know. Maybe it's just Jewish tradition at that point. By way of the king's gate, through the gate between the two walls. Now, there's several references possible to this gate. We're not sure exactly where it is. You might want to see Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 14, Nehemiah 3, 15, and Nehemiah 12, 37, for the possibility of this gate by the pool of Siloam. Now, notice in verse 6, it mentions that he had to meet Nebuchadnezzar II face to face at Riblah, and he did that. He was sentenced, and all that he had came about that Jeremiah said. Notice in verse 8, it mentions the houses of the people. Now, the Masoretic text is singular, which means meeting hall or synagogue or something. That's what the Talmud says, synagogue. But really, Kimchi says the people's houses. That's paralleled in 2 Kings 25:9, and that has influenced all modern translations, which make it plural. Notice that the captain, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the bodyguard, which literally means the chief slaughterer, chief butcher. Now, that's used both of the executioner and of the chief cook. And so it's hard to know which exactly it is. He gave the poorest people of the land the vineyards and fields and let them stay there so they could give a tribute to Nebuchadnezzar. Didn't take everybody, left the very poorest there. In verse 13, these two leaders are mentioned again. A lot of people say, well, verse 13 is different from chapter 40, verses 1 through 6. It is different. We don't know if it's two different accounts of the capture of Jeremiah and his release, or if it's just an unknown series of circumstance. We just can't be sure. In verse 14, Gedaliah, who later becomes governor, chapter 40, verse 7, Jeremiah is given into his hand. His father, Ahikam, was very favorable to Jeremiah, chapter 26, verse 24. He helped Jeremiah, and the parallels found in 2 Kings 22, 12 through 14. Okay? Now, Zedekiah was not a descendant of David. The Babylonian official did not want another divinic ruler to possible there. So he makes someone who's not of the line of David, Zedekiah, to be governor. Took him to his home. Now, this is in Mizpah, we learn, a few miles north of Jerusalem, we think, chapter 40, verse 8. Now, 15 through 18 relates back, chapter 38, verse 7 through 13, about Ebed-Melech, that Ethiopian man who helped Jeremiah. And God promises that he will protect him from the Jews that were trying to kill him, and that he will survive on the exile. And we have some of his ancestors mentioned later on. Now, in chapter 40, here's another account of how Jeremiah was taken in chains as far as Ramah. Well, let me go back to Nebuzaradan, captain of the bodyguard. It seems from 2 Kings 24, verses 3 and 8, that he came 1 month after Jerusalem fell. And the reason he came was to destroy the city and be in charge of the deportation of all the people. Okay? Now, they've taken Jeremiah in chains as far as Ramah. The Midrash says that Jeremiah saw the young Jewish men in chains and he joined them voluntarily. But we just don't know that. Now, verses 2, 3, and 4 have been questioned by many commentators and even taken out of the text because they say this is too high of a theology for a Babylonian officer. Even the word Yahweh is used. Well, maybe they had been told by some of these Jewish deserters that there was a prophet in the city that was preaching that the city would fall to the Nebuchadnezzar. Maybe they heard Jeremiah's sermons from some of these deserters. So I don't think we can take it out of the text because some folks think theology is too elevated for a Babylonian official. Boy, the preconceived notions some of these scholars have and tear up the text is unbelievable. I'll take the text over any scholar any day. I'll tell you what. Now, verse 4, you ought to see chapter 39, 12, if you would. And then it says, go wherever it seems good and right for you to go. He gave him freedom. And the first part of verse 5 is very difficult in the Hebrew. It says he was still going back. I don't know if it's Jeremiah or Nebuzaradan. We're just not sure. Anyway, he chose to stay there, and he went to Mizpah. Now, Mizpah is watchtower in Hebrew. There are many cities by the name Mizpah. This one particularly seems to be a central location. We see from Judges 20, verses 1 through 3. It is also the place where Saul was chosen. 1 Samuel 10, 17 and following. So it had great ties with the past. I'm sure that the stink of the dead bodies and the utter destruction of Jerusalem made it impossible for Gedaliah to start the government, the new government there. So he moved it north, apparently to his home area, and started there. Now, we'll cover chapter 47 and following next time, which deals with what happened right after the siege. These sieges are so terrible, you just can't imagine how bad they are. People were eating their own children who had died. There was just a lot of people deserting, and these sieges were just unbelievable. And this shows the calmness of the prophet, and yet it shows his human side. It shows the weak, vacillating nature of Zedekiah and the palace intrigue, as some were pro-Egyptian and some were pro-Jeremiah, and some didn't know what to do. Oh, what a terrible, terrible time it must have been. Jeremiah's ministry is going to continue for many more days. He's a great man of God. He's got feet of clay. They knew he was a prophet because all that he said had come true, and yet they still wouldn't listen to his word. Zedekiah wouldn't listen to his word. The remnant of Judah wouldn't listen to his word. It's just like us to want to hear God's word and then not respond to it.